Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation about management in the federal government is with Kyle McSlarro. Kyle's the Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Energy, and joining us in our conversation is Kevin Costello.
Kyle, can you tell us a little bit about your career before coming to your present position?
Sure. I have largely been a creature of Washington, D.C., and in and around the political process. I've been a private practitioner as a lawyer. I actually ran for Congress a couple of times. I worked for several senators, and at one time worked for the Secretary of the Army, and indeed I was a captain in the United States Army. And then I actually worked at an internet firm for about 18 months. I like to tell people I've seen the entire business cycle from beginning to end. But it's always sort of been around. My first love has always been the political process, and so one facet or another has touched on that.
How would you compare the different parts of government? You've been in the legislative sector and now the executive branch.
It's a curious irony, really. In some ways, when you're a staffer on the Hill, you feel like you can get things done. You can pass a law. You can do all those things that work toward either the House or the members of the Senate, you know, enacting legislation, and you can actually feel some sense of, okay, we did something. But you're always missing that piece of actually implementing it. And so in some sense, you feel like you haven't actually sort of, you know, fulfilled yourself because you haven't actually been out there doing whatever it was you were working on. When you're in the executive branch, it's kind of the opposite. You are a doer. I mean, I get to make decisions every day, big and small. And yet, on a broad policy level, it can be very frustrating working in the executive branch. It doesn't matter what level you are. It's just so big and so cumbersome that most decisions are measured in months, and a lot of them take years. And people just don't have an attention span that really lends itself to feeling rewarded in that sense. So, you know, it's one of those things. I think having worked in both the legislative and the executive branches, I've seen both sides now, and I feel good about the fact that I've done both. And it's sort of a two halves to the same thing. But it's really a difference of I think the numbers of people that you actually have to interact with who make decisions. It's very simple when you work for a senator. You got one boss. Yeah.
When you described the department at the opening of this show, you broke it into the four principal lines of business: national security, energy resources, science and technology, and environmental quality. And we'd like to kind of take you through those now and ask you some questions about that. Could you tell us about the activities of the department regarding national security, especially in the context of homeland security?
We actually have a couple of different roles. First, and the most obvious, is the fact that we're responsible for maintaining a safe and reliable nuclear deterrent. We are constantly monitoring the weapon stockpile, and then, when necessary, refurbishing those weapons. And that's really at the absolute zenith of the Secretary of Energy's responsibilities. Next, we are also responsible for implementing a variety of programs that are focused on ensuring that weapons of mass destruction don't proliferate around the world. And the bulk of those programs are programs that have been supported on a bipartisan basis for about a decade by Congress, that are focused on Russia. And in the aftermath of the Cold War, and as they move toward democratization, there was a real serious question about who is going to control, obviously, the nuclear weapons, but it's broader than that, the entire continuum of activities that supported sort of their strategic programs, whether it was chemical or biological or nuclear weapons development. We spend quite a lot of money on that. Our non-proliferation programs are about $1 billion. And now that's focused overseas. It's principally focused, but not exclusively, in Russia. And we've started branching out to some other, either former Soviet Union states or some other states. But that starts to get into the question you asked, because that really is the first line of defense when it comes to homeland security. I mean, ideally, you want to be able to control those kinds of materials over there at a source. But what September 11th has done, and what the new Department of Homeland Security is doing, is we now view this, I think, differently. We now view this as something that is overseas to home, and we need to make sure we have all our bases covered. And so as you move closer to America, to the ports in Europe, for example, where materials might be smuggled on board, you would then find the Department of Energy and its technical expertise working hand in glove with the Department of Homeland Security and working with the host countries to make sure we have the ability to detect these kinds of materials and ideally to stop it. And then as you move closer to our shores with customs and the FBI and the law enforcement actually domestically, now you're really traditionally getting into stuff that's true Homeland Security types of functions that would either be handled by that department and or the Department of Justice. And then on top of all of that, to go back to the national laboratories, which we have in the Department of Energy complex, they are our laboratories in the sense that we manage them. And we provide, obviously, the bulk of the funding for our programs. But they are also capable and do quite a lot of work for other entities. And Congress made clear last year, and we're working with the Department of Homeland Security on this, that they wanted the new department to be able to tap into this kind of expertise. Just to give you an example, a lot of people don't realize this, but quite a lot of sort of the technology solutions to Homeland Security had been something we had just focused on in our national labs, really before Homeland Security became an issue, just because it seemed like, you know, useful kinds of activities to engage in. So the foam that a lot of people I think will remember was used to actually clean the Hart Senate office building and some other areas that were potentially infected by anthrax spores was actually something created at the Sandia National Lab, and it was created well before 9/11 and that anthrax attack ever took place, just because some scientists decided that this was something that somebody needed to study and come up with a solution to. So a lot of times you've got scientists out there who are just thinking way ahead of where everybody else is. And part of what we like to do is to give these laboratories the flexibility not only to do the work we're asking them to do and that maybe the new Department of Homeland Security is asking them to do, but also to think about what other kinds of things need to be done. And that was an instance where they hit it dead on.
Kyle, from the perspective of the energy consumer, can you share what the department's activities are in terms of deployment and focus of resource, especially in light of the recent spike in gas prices and rolling blackouts and the like?
Yeah, I said at the outset, it's an interesting thing that despite our department's name, we actually don't have a responsibility for energy. And that's actually not just completely tongue-in-cheek. We're not a regulatory agency. We're basically an R&D agency. So we tend to view energy policy as something that's related to technology and technology solutions. So a lot of our focus tends to be on how we can ensure that whatever the energy source, whether it's renewable energy, wind and solar and geothermal, things like that, or nuclear energy or coal, or what have you, can be delivered safely, abundantly, cheaply, and most importantly, in recent days, cleanly. So a lot of our work goes to that. But the Secretary of Energy is the chief energy advisor to the president. And so sometimes it's just the bully pulpit, but the bully pulpit is not unimportant. Natural gas is an issue where we've actually kind of raised the alarm in recent months that we have a tremendous strains on the system right now with natural gas. We produce less than we used to here at home. And natural gas is used not just for home heating, but increasingly over the last decade or so has been used to actually produce electricity. And so everybody loves natural gas. There just isn't enough of it. And so it's really put a strain. It's injected some volatility into the market. And so one of the things that we're doing on June 26 is hosting a national summit on natural gas to make sure that we're focused on what it is we can do to find additional supplies of natural gas, and also what steps we can do as a nation to focus on conserving natural gas when we don't need to use it, and really trying to find a balanced approach. And that's not something that's regulatory. It's not going to be a government mandate, but it's something that our department has a responsibility, if you will, to try to pull together not just producers and consumers, but environmentalists, other stakeholders, to try to arrive at something that goes to sort of the national well-being.
You're responsible for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, if I have got that correct. From time to time, people say gas price goes up. Let's open that up. Could you maybe give us another history lesson? Why do we have that, and what's the purpose of it?
Yeah, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is the result of the oil embargoes in the 70s. And at the time, when we were without a petroleum reserve, we really were sort of at the mercy of oil cartels. Congress made a decision. It was an expensive one. I mean, we're talking a couple billion dollars to buy oil and store it in salt caverns in Louisiana, two in Louisiana, two in Texas. And they have a capacity to store about 700 million barrels. We've actually filled them to 600 million barrels. And to put that in perspective, if you had a complete wipeout of all our oil imports, we could survive just off that for over 50 days. And nothing on the horizon suggests we're ever going to have that kind of a problem. The kind of problem you tend to have is the one you identified, which is there is a supply shortage somewhere in the world, whether it's Iraq and the oil supply stopping there, or the strike that took place last winter in Venezuela. Some proportion of the oil is off the market and the price rises as a result. Our view as a policy matter is that oil reserve is there for national security purposes. It is there when you truly have a severe oil supply shortage. It's not there to manipulate price in the markets. And sometimes people have a hard time accepting that, but I think ultimately it's the right thing to do to know that we're not wasting that asset, because we have yet to confront the truly horrible situation of oil supply shortage, and hopefully we won't, but if we do, we'll be ready.
That makes sense. How's the Department of Energy addressing the items called out in the President's management agenda? We'll ask Kyle McSlarrow to bring us up to date when the Business of Government Hour returns.